I'm Desiree DiOrio, Long Island Bureau Chief for WSHU Public Radio. Staying well informed is essential to a strong democracy. Understanding the facts and cutting through the noise takes work. At WSHU, our mission is to help you do just that, with coverage from our newsroom, NPR, and the BBC. Your financial support makes it all possible. We're expanding our world together.
About $12 million in new grants will power dozens of projects in the Long Island Sound watershed. That includes an effort to remove dams in Connecticut to help migrating fish reach their destinations. Emma Simoneau with the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection says this is an issue unique to the state.
We have a huge number of dams. I think we have the highest number of dams per river mile in the country, or at least in New England. And so resources to address challenges and improve the quality of those dams are really important to the residents of the state and to our environmental and ecological goals.
Funding comes from the Long Island Sound Partnership, established by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the states of Connecticut and New York. This is WSHU's After All Things, with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Bridgeport's newly elected city council is without a leader. Stony Brook University will expand a farm-to-classroom training program in Southampton. Connecticut officials want to hear from residents about bear sightings. Plus, did you know that our region is home to a nationally renowned soy sauce? Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Bridgeport's newly elected city council adjourned its first meeting yesterday without choosing a leader. WSHU's Molly Ingram reports it could be a first.
The council has 20 members, all Democrats. A candidate needs a majority of them to win the presidency. Jeanette Herron got 10 votes and current council president Adi Nieves got 8. Two members repeatedly refused to vote without giving a reason, so Mayor Joe Ganim said they would move on.
Yeah. All right, the vote fails. We don't have a council president. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the appointment of the City Council standing committees. I don't know what to tell you. You don't want to pick a council president.
Ganim closed the meeting shortly after. He told council members not to worry and that the decision would be sorted out under the rules. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
Stony Brook University at Southampton will launch a new community garden this spring. WSHU's Christopher Scholes has the story.
The garden will be open to the public and will serve as a place to socialize, grow fruits and vegetables, and simply relax. It's part of Stony Brook University's Food Lab, an immersive farm-to-classroom training ground in Southampton. Judy-Ann Carmack-Fayaz is the executive director of Food Lab. She says the garden offers more than just food.
If you've ever been in the garden, it's really calming, and we've actually had people who have been working here or over the past couple of years who have had different issues, but who have really sort of healed over time just working in the soil.
$50,000 in funding comes from the Urban Farms and Community Gardens Grant. Christopher Schultz, WSHU News.
Bears. They're everywhere in Connecticut lately, especially the more wooded northwestern parts of the state. So what to do about it? WSHU's Davis Donovan reports officials want to hear from residents.
Bears have broken into houses in Connecticut 30 times this year. The State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection says that's an all-time high. 16 municipalities saw bear break-ins, but they've been spotted in every single city and town in the state. Yes, even cities like Bridgeport and New Haven. Bears are usually just looking for food, but these big fuzzy guys can be a little dangerous. A North Canaan man was injured in August when he and his dog accidentally got between a mama bear and her cubs. So the state is asking residents in four Connecticut towns to share their concerns. They're meeting in Derby, Sharon, Burlington, and New Hartford over the next week. You can find out more at DEEP's website. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
Who knew that one of the toughest foods to make was quietly bubbling away in Connecticut? We'll hear all about it coming up.
Vocal support for After All Things comes from Hartford HealthCare. For the second time, all hospitals received A ratings from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent hospital monitor. This means that patients have access to the safest level of care, no matter which hospital they choose.
I'm Suzanne Bona. I really loved my very first brand new car, which was a stick shift Nissan Sentra, completely stripped down because that's all I could afford on my public radio paycheck. But it was a wonderful car. It had that new car smell, so that was really kind of fun. I loved that that Nissan Sentra was mine. To donate your car to WSHU Public Radio, just go to WSHU.org.
If you're on Long Island, be careful. There is lots of flu out there. Flu cases doubled on Long Island over the past week, according to the State Health Department, and doctors say they expect even more cases in the coming weeks thanks to all the family gatherings. New York Army National Guard recruiters are the best in the country at finding and keeping soldiers, according to the Pentagon, and that's across all branches of the military. They recruited more than 2,000 people over the past year, mostly enlisted soldiers, but also dozens of officers. A street takeover in East Haven, Connecticut, led to what police are calling an unprovoked attack on a marked cruiser. They say one person sprayed the car with a fire extinguisher, then threw it at the car while other people climbed on top of it and kicked it. A former mayor of Meriden, Connecticut, has died at age 80 after a long illness. Michael Rhodes spent decades on Meriden's city council and led the city from 2008 to 2013. He built new infrastructure in the city, including schools, a library, and the city green. Making soy sauce is hard, and it's only done in a few places around the country, and one of them is North Stonington, Connecticut. WSHU's Ebong Udama spoke with the Connecticut Mirror's Laura Tillman, who's done a deep dive on this. Their conversation is part of the collaborative podcast, Long Story Short.
You were intrigued when you found out that Moromi soy sauce is manufactured in North Stonington, Connecticut. How did you find that out?
I think I was just doing some reading. I had written a story last year about Chef Jacques Pepin, and I'm always really interested in what's going on in food. I had spent a number of years before this working on a book about a chef, so that's just a topic that I'm interested in. And I think I was kind of on the hunt for another interesting, quirky kind of food story based in Connecticut.
And so you come across this source, and then how do you go about telling the story? Because Bob Florence seems like a fantastic character.
Yeah, he's done a number of interviews. So I read up on, you know, what he had discussed about this journey. And then I got to go to the Moromi brewery. The factory is making soy sauce, referred to as breweries, I came to learn, and interviewed him there and got to sample some of the different Moromi products. And yeah, he has had an amazingly interesting journey up to this point. I think in a lot of ways, when you hear what his story is, it makes total sense that he's making soy sauce now. But he, you know, started out in industrial plastics, selling these plastics, having lived in Detroit and working for the car manufacturing industry at a time when manufacturers were replacing a lot of these kind of clunky, heavy metal parts in cars with plastics to improve mileage. And so he ended up doing a lot of business in Japan in his career. And because of that, went to Japan, ate a lot of great food in Japan, learned about soy sauce, which in Japan is shoyu. And then, you know, many years later, after he had moved to Mystic, started thinking about another business idea and also a hobby of making his own soy sauce at home.
But before he got to the soy sauce, he had another project that he had worked on, trying to make fuel, right?
Yeah, fuel from algae through a fermentation process. And that project was scientifically successful, but it didn't end up being a profitable business at the time. So that kind of linked his experience with manufacturing and his experience with chemistry and his experience with fermentation all together, which are kind of like these key elements to having successful time making soy sauce and manufacturing it.
Now tell us a little bit about soy sauce. What is it?
So there's a process by which this mold called koji is added to soybeans and to wheat, or it could also be rye berries. And the mold kind of eats at these ingredients and then ferments. And so that mash of ingredients, once the koji has had time to inoculate the soybeans and the wheat, are put into barrels in a mash, and that mash starts to ferment, and it's kind of producing this kind of slow motion Maillard reaction, which is the same process when you're cooking and heating something, and basically proteins and sugars are being heated. So over time, you know, it creates this substance that really kind of lights up your mouth when you're eating it through this other partner in the business, James Wayman, who's a chef based on the Connecticut coast. I learned kind of about his experience with koji and with soy sauce, and kind of how he views it as a really critical component to taking his food to the next level.
Now, James Wayman is another person involved in this, and he happens to be a chef.
Yes. Yeah, so James was, when he met Bob Florence, he was the head chef at Oyster Club, the acclaimed restaurant. And then he ended up separating off and founding Nana's, which has locations in Mystic and Westerly, Rhode Island. And Nana's is kind of a all-day cafe, they call it. It's a bakery. They also have pizza, and they have rotisserie chicken, and they have specials. So there's a lot kind of going on their menu. And when Bob Florence and James Wayman met, Bob Florence asked James Wayman to just try the soy sauce that he was making. I think for him, it was kind of like, you know, he was making this thing as a pet project, but it would mean a lot to him to have a chef like James taste it and just give him his thoughts. And immediately James Wayman put it on the menu at Oyster Club and called it Bob Florence soy sauce on the menu. And at the time, you know, it takes about a year to brew one of these barrels of soy sauce.
Wow, so that long.
So for Bob Florence, he wasn't kind of ready to scale up that quickly. He was like, do I really have enough of this stuff to be putting it on a menu of a restaurant? But over time, they decided to go into business together, to make this together.
Now tell us about the third person in this story, Debbie Florence.
So Debbie is Bob Florence's wife. She is a Japanese-American children's book author. And so she has also written some great children's books about Japanese food, and specifically kind of a picture book biography of a Michelin-starred chef named Nikki Nakayama. But yeah, so the three of them went into this business together.
Well, it's fascinating that, you know, how these things happen. And one of the few manufacturers of soy sauce in the U.S. is located right here in Connecticut. Well, thank you so much, Laura. It's a wonderful story. Laura Tillman is the Connecticut Mirror's Human Services Reporter. I'm Ebon Udama.
For the latest news from around Long Island Sound, listen to us on the radio, online at WSHU.org, or download the free WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. And on this Giving Tuesday, consider supporting the local independent journalism you rely on. When you donate to WSHU today, your gift will go twice as far thanks to a generous match. Visit our website to learn more, or you can even give us a call if you prefer. That number is 800-777-9748. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your evening, and I'll speak to you tomorrow.